Hey, this is Jeremy Roenick, and guess what? You guys are listening to the Jim Bob Show.
Hey, this is Wayne Larrabee, and you're listening to Roar on WGN.
Hey, this is Jim McMahon, and you're listening to the Jim Bob Show.
I had to pop a beer for this one.
Atta boy.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Brian Urlacher, and you're listening to the Jim Bob Show.
That's awesome.
Oh,
that's
it. How about one? This is Brian Urlacher. I'm not a bitch.
No.
That's the best. Love that one, huh?
Hey, this is John Gruden.
We went ahead and made a commitment to the Bears and ponied up and got the suite. It's been a big disappointment.
Well, you're a hard guy to please. Don't forget that. You're a hard guy to please.
Yeah, they're 40-1, which is shorter than I thought. You know, it
why aren't they 100-1?
Yeah,
you know.
I know.
720 WGN high atop Chicago Skyline Studio, typically there, but Jim Bob, right now we're in the Wanna Parlay El Bandito hideout. We are here right now and honored to have on the line an absolute Bears legend, an NFL Hall of Famer, Gridiron Greats ambassador, and Jim Bob, probably the most electric player ever in the NFL.
The greatest return specialist ever. Inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the first primary returner to get that honor. And you know, Devin Hester, folks, without any further ado. Hey, I see you got the U on, buddy, and we're going to start this off about, you know, playing at the U and getting drafted by the Bears in 2006 and so forth. But I kind of wanted to go back to your time at the U. A couple of things is that I know when I played college ball, before I got into the pros, we had hard practices. And in some instances, I do believe my college practices were harder than the pros. And the U, especially back in your era in 2004, they practiced hard. Did you feel that your practices at the U were harder than when you got into the NFL?
Oh, most definitely, man. I would say, yeah, I practiced way harder conditioning-wise, weight room, you know what I mean, all the 9 yards. Waking up 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning for morning lifts, morning runs was just way more intense than the NFL, most definitely.
You know, by 2005, after you'd kind of showed, you know, your stuff and so forth, college teams, they could, you know, they just said, okay, we're not going to kick them anymore. And so that 2005 year, that transition year after you'd kind of exploded on the scene in 2004 – how'd you handle that? Because you had to have incredible patience, and it had to be frustrating when they wouldn't kick to you, you know, your sophomore year.
Yeah, it was very frustrating. But at the end of the day, you know, we're coming off an amazing season the year before and had done kind of solidified ourselves as a return unit and one of the best return units in the college football league. And so that part there kind of made it more easy knowing how dangerous it was, and teams were just – not only playing scared, but they admitted they were scared. So that kind of like took a lot of pressure off me, knowing that they, you know, more so respected us. So, and then when we did get our opportunities, we made sure we made them pay.
Yeah, you made them pay for sure. You know, you went three ways, basically. Your special teams, you played offense and defense. Do you think that if you had not become the world greatest returner and just stayed at cornerback, do you think you could have got into the Hall of Fame just playing cornerback?
I honestly think so. A lot of people don't know, I came out of high school rated the number one corner in the nation. And so, you know, when I did get my opportunity at UM to play, which my sophomore year, I ended up playing a lot towards the end of the season. And within like 4 or 5 games, the last 4 or 5 games of the season, I ended up leading the team in picks throughout the whole season. So imagine me playing a full year. Yeah. At the corner position.
Well,
you know what I mean?
And sacks. Like, you led the team in interceptions and sacks, so they brought you in. You played a lot of nickel. I went back and I did a lot of study on you and before the draft and so forth, and it was interesting. You know, you remember the shuttle run that we had to do and all that stuff. Is that
right?
The scout notes on you was the Devin Hester, basically called the lateral thrust, in the fact that scouts were talking about your track background. You know, you won the long jump, I think, in the indoor that one year. But they were talking about the Hester jump cut. It was it was something that the special notes that the scouts had on Devin, and the fact that he had such a lateral thrust it was kind of off the charts. I don't even know if we measured a lateral thrust when we were doing back in my era, back in the late 80s and so forth. So you'll have to tell us about the Hester jump cut, because it's something that I didn't even know scouts were making a note of. Lateral thrust, I go, what the hell are they talking about? So can you explain that?
Yeah, to be honest with you, this is my first time hearing this.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware of this situation, other scouts putting that in their notes. I don't know. I guess it was a move that I made.
Yeah, they called it a lateral thrust, and they said the Hester jump cut is off the charts. And I'm like, going, where was that measured, and how did they do that? But you know, you were a track guy though too, and you know, maybe it's just the fact that hey, growing up on the streets like you did back where you grew up in Riviera Beach, is it maybe you needed to have that speed in those jump cuts? You know, get out of trouble.
Exactly, man. So you know, it's just something that you did as a kid. You find something that you're good at, and you just kind of polish it up as you get older, and try to use it as a football player, as a secret weapon.
Back at the U, you know, when you were there, I know how hard the practices were, because I've talked to a bunch of guys that went through the U, got a lot of friends and so forth, and they talk about how hard the practices were. So you had to have some teammates back in the day that were pretty hard on you, that you had to be a little bit concerned with those guys in practice. Who specifically would you name was maybe the toughest on the team that you had a little bit of concern for, but he might go a little unhinged, it might hit me?
To be honest, I never really thought about it. I wasn't one of the kids that was in the back of the line complaining and stuff. I was more so up front. So I don't really, really remember having somebody that I looked at him like, oh, Lord, I'm scared of him. He's going to hit me or beat me up.
Jim, no one could hit him.
Right.
And they wouldn't want to anyway.
You know, the only people that looked out for those guys were the guys that were slackers and the guys that was always in the back of the line and making up excuses for not finishing their drill. So they had to pay attention to who was going to hit them.
Yeah.
You think about this, and you always say how you changed the game. Jim Bob just mentioned, even on the talent assessment side, how you changed the way that they assess talent. But the fact that that's not a common thing now means that you were one of one, and they never had to worry about that again. You look at it on the return side, how you changed the game, how everybody did it. But are you surprised, Devin, even though you opened the door for the possibility for people to become pure returners, that no one was able to emulate, whether it's the talent or the success, to kind of fill that gap? I mean, you created a space for it, but nobody's filled that space.
Right. You know, I always think about it after making the Hall of Fame that, you know, you think about all the great athletes, you think about the great running backs, quarterbacks, and you try to... When you get in that Hall of Fame family, you try to figure out, okay, everybody's a Hall of Fame. We all know that. Everybody deserves to be in the room. And then you sit back as an individual and you try to think like, well, wow, who is the best quarterback though? Like, who is the best running back? Who is the best linebacker? And you have all these kind of conversations, you know what I mean, amongst your close peers, you know, you try to figure out, well, who is number one, number two? And in my category, and I sit back and I say, wow, there's really nobody to compete against. Because I'm the first one.
No, and I'm so happy about that. We had Bill Bradley on the show a couple of years ago. Bill Bradley was back in the 70s, played for the Philadelphia Eagles, and he was a punt returner and nothing to the degree of your success. But Bill and I talked about it in the fact that we felt that there should be more special team players in the NFL Hall of Fame. I mean, you know, you only got a couple of kickers. You're the only one primary returner and so deserved. But they're really, I think the NFL Hall of Fame ought to look a little bit closer towards more Hall of Fame special teamers. And I appreciate what you did as far as opening up for return, but you did such a spectacular job. You are clearly the GOAT in regards to that category. There's no debate. It's not like who was the best quarterback in all the Hall of Fame. You are clearly the best all-time returner in the Hall of Fame.
Appreciate that, man. You know, a lot of people overlook special team, you know, and it takes a great group of guys and a great group of men to really voice their opinion to even get us recognized. And when I look at the Hall of Fame, like, as a special team, we already don't not favored to be in the Hall of Fame. So I feel in this situation, you really have to do something very extreme to even catch anybody's eye. So, you know, for the next guy to come in as a Hall of Famer, when it comes to special team, really, really going to have to stand off the chart and make a real big statement for guys that draw their attention.
Well, yeah. You're drawing attention to a lot of different things. Obviously, the position and some of the success, and certainly you got two teams that are going for things, important things this year. But let's talk a little bit about Gridiron Greats. You mentioned you weren't worried about anybody, you know, hitting you or hurting you, and you were pretty elusive. Not everybody is as elusive. And for those players that are getting on in age, Gridiron Greats Foundation is really helping them, and you're supporting that cause.
Most definitely. It's just a recap. It's celebrating their 17-year anniversary of Port Ryan Appreciation Day. They are doing something special February 8th, 2026, by supporting Gridiron Greats Association funds. I know that they are offering two game tickets, airfare and hotel, for the 2027 Super Bowl in Los Angeles. And on top of that, they're getting a year's supply of Port Ryan. So the way to enter in this, you have to visit portryan.com and enter in the competition to win this event. But they're doing things like this that's drawing a lot of attention to people to come out, you know, and support Port Ryan.
So, Devin, think about this. That game, if you get to go, it'll be the Bears going for a back-to-back Super Bowl win. Just your thoughts as one of those guys, one of those very few guys actually played in the Super Bowl for the Chicago Bears, made a huge impact for it. Obviously supporting your teams, you know, the U is going for a national championship, but this Bears mania, I mean, are you catching some of that fever? Everyone is super excited.
Yeah, most definitely. I was actually at the last home game. Well, actually the first playoff game, they just came back and beat Green Bay. That was an amazing game. I don't know if you guys watched that.
Painfully so. Yes, I was there. Yeah. We have the Wana Parlay folks we our suite is there, and El Bendito Yankee. And so, yes, I was there. Being a former Green Bay Packer, that was super painful, buddy. And thank you for bringing it up.
But they got a tough task coming up this week against the Rams. So
yeah,
man, we glad right now that we have home field advantage right now going that's in our favor, and hopefully that we can continue out this W with the Rams, man, to move on to the next team.
Well, you know, and the fact that the weather's pretty bad, I think the weather, you know, it's going to have a factor on that Rams game, that Rams team. And kind of segue into that a little bit, I had the question, you know, I played at Soldier Field. You played there for 8 years. You know, it's the windy condition, the windy city. But, you know, how much do you think some of your success was? Because you figured out those weird air currents at Soldier Field better than anybody and better than the punters did. I mean, I kind of call that the part of your business, the Hester rule. I mean, were there some days that were really tricky and that wind created some problems for you? Or do you think it was more problems for the kickers?
It was more problems for the kickers. You know, I knew when the wind was blowing terrible that I probably wasn't going to get the ball anyways. But those guys, they had it more so worried about it more than me because they had to kick the ball. And, you know, you try to kick up, you try to punt the ball, and then you end up punting a negative 10-yard punt because the wind is so bad. You know, it's just, and then who knows how the field goal guy, the kickers were, they was terrified before they even got to the stadium. And you can see the look on those guys' face during pregame warm-up. Like, it's no way you're going to be able to kick field goals today. Uh-oh. So the wind was terrible.
You know, the league changed the rules. We got the new rules today. And I was having a conversation about you with one of my friends today. And I was saying, hey, we got, you know, Devin's coming on here. We're going to talk to him about it. I go, I believe that in today's rules that you would have exceeded what you did previously in the NFL. And I really believe that these rules would help you and you would have even more impressive records, in my opinion. And I also, so I want you to talk about that, but also too, I think the special teams coaches have not caught up to the nuances of these rules and the fact that I think when they do, and somebody like you or even half your skills comes along, we're going to see some dynamics. But I don't think the schemes on the return side is there yet with the scheme or the run back scheme yet. I think you would have crushed this rule.
I tell everybody this too, when they ask me about this new rule. I love this rule. When you sit and watch the game and you get an opportunity to see it from the stands, from the press box, it's almost like a punt return. It's really a punt return. You find one hole and you go in. I get so frustrated just by watching it from the stands and watching it from, you know, the press box, because it's it's like, man, it's so many opportunities out there, man. It's just, you know, you just got to find that one guy that just can find no holes and have the great vision to pick out the set blocks up and just hit that one little crease and they out of there, man. I'm like, man, I would have killed this league with this type of rule in factor.
You know, me and Dane were laughing about this. We were talking about elite athletes talk about the game slowed down for them. I will tell you, I apparently was never an elite athlete. The moment I stepped on the NFL field, I thought the thing went a million miles an hour. So I was not elite, apparently. No. But you know, you were. You talk about the slow down motion effect and so forth, and people talk about it slowing down. But you know, when they were kicking off to you, and you would see those 11 guys sprinting your way, and you guys had a called set. You know, we were going to return right, we're going to return left, or whatever your special team set that you had in play. Could you see some things opening up way in advance, or did your speed and some elements go in one direction generate some of those changes? Because it's, you know, every kickoff is like a snowflake. They are different.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of both. I know the speed had a lot to do with it, but I also knew timing and patience and things like that. Some returners don't know how to set their guys up when I mean by that is setting up blocks. They have no idea of how to set up a block. Like to the day when you watch the returners run and you got a guy in front of you and you outrunning to your blocker, you're not even putting him in the best position to make the block. It's just certain things that I see today that returners just don't know about it. I just don't use to their advantage. Even when kickers outkick their coverages, you know what I mean? The returners are going right to the side right away. Like you got time, you got a good 8 yards, 10 yards to set up your opponents to make them feel like he won one way and then come back the other way. Like everything is almost rushed. Like they had no idea of setting up things. Mm-hmm. But then it comes to the point where some don't do it because they're not comfortable with their speed and being able to make it back over there. You know what I mean? To get back to the other side. So it has a lot to do with it. You got to have speed. You got to have a quick burst and you got to have vision and understanding how to set up your block. And if you have those three things in common, then you should be a successful returner.
Well, you know, when we talk about speed, this is the only guy on Madden to get the 100 speed icon, Dane. Okay. See, that's called digital perfect. All right. So your rating of 100, you know, on your brand, you know, you have your own brand and it is related to speed and so forth. So off the field, how have you transitioned the brand of you and being with that iconic speed designation? 100 speed icon. I think the only person on the Madden to ever have it.
I think that's a trend that probably will stay with me for the rest of my life. For the younger kids that was catching me on the tail end of my career, all they know is I was the player with the 100 speed. So a lot of kids, a younger kid, that's all they know me as, a guy that was on Madden with the 100 speed.
You know, it's funny because I was, you know, I used to be, back when, you know, we first brought out those, I mean, we used to travel around when we would go to games, and I was like the undefeated champion of the 1987, you know, a version of that. So when you came out, I was still playing it. You know, my kids thought that they could beat me, and they couldn't, so it was disappointing. But, you know, talking about that speed, you know, you're 34 years of age when you went to Seattle. And you had that great game in Seattle and your return yards in the playoffs. You had 5 returns for almost 200 yards that day. That was an incredible day. Was that a special day? Because, you know, 11 seasons you maintained that high level of speed when a lot of returners, you know, they basically flame out and after 3 years. And you kept it for 11 years. That game, Seahawks game, those playoffs, that had to be meaningful.
It was very meaningful because I knew that, to be honest, going into that game, I knew that it was a possibility that might be my last game of my career, you know, because I had the toe injury that I had surgery on the year before, and it just wasn't the same. So I knew that going and playing out that season there, that it was going to be painful to have another season playing on that type of injury. And I just really wanted to go out with a bang. When you brought up them stats saying five returns for over a little over 200 yards, you know, that was just a way of me going out with a bang. But in reality, I had 2 returns called back. One was like 60-some yards, and another one was like 40-some yards.
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't know that. Yeah.
You can go back and watch that. I had a punt return that was called back. That was like, I want to say almost like 70-yard punt return. And then I had a kickoff return that went for like 40-something.
Yeah.
That got called back too. So I had to be honest with you, if those two that get called back, that was 300 yards returning game with seven returns.
Wow. That would have been another NFL record.
Would have been.
Yeah. You know, hey, talking about, you know, your record performance, when you broke Deion's record, you were wearing an Atlanta Falcons jersey. And, you know, Deion was in the stands, and then you high-step it in there. I remember watching that and having Deion there. Tell us about that. That had to be pretty darn cool as well.
Yeah, a lot of people do know, a lot of people maybe don't know, but, you know, Deion was one of my mentors coming out of college. We built a relationship when I was in college. And throughout my career, you know what I mean, we kept in touch. I visited him at his home. He visited me at my home. We text messages daily, you know what I mean, throughout my career. So we had built a strong relationship. You know, he was rooting for me. He knew at the time that I was one return away, but shy for breaking this record. And, you know, he told me that, hey, man, I won't miss this opportunity for nothing in the world. He remember being at the Super Bowl. He remember returning as he was actually at the game at the Super Bowl on the field when I did it. So he talked about that so much. And then not only the Super Bowl, but then when I broke his record in Atlanta, he was actually there, like you say. And, you know, he was at that moment after the game, we did an interview together. And, you know, he was more proud than I was, to be honest with you, man. So that really speaks highly of him, what he think about me and how he respect me.
Wow. Those are amazing. And we've got a couple amazing things happening with the two games here. You gave your prediction for the Bears, hopefully that the Bears can make it back to the Super Bowl again this year. And of course, Miami trying to make some history right now with basically a home game to beat really just an amazingly resurgent Indiana team. You got a prediction there? Do you think, you know, what do you think is going to happen in the championship?
I think right now, Monday game with Miami and Indiana, I think it's going to be, it's not going to be no blowout. I know that for a fact. This is going to be, it's going, I feel like it's going to go down to the wire. And it's going to come with whoever had the most grit, whoever won it the most. It's going to be some hard hits out there. Who's going to back down and who's going to continue to fight type of game. I do feel like with the home field advantage that we have, that we will edge it out just because I feel like we're going to last the longest when it comes down to fighting.
Are you surprised about how Indiana's been able to, over the course of a couple years, because of the NIL and the coaching, be able to build what is, I don't know, maybe going to be a dynasty compared to, let's say, you know, Miami, that's been a dynasty for decades, right? It took a long time, and they're still there. You got this resurgent team is pretty strong.
Yeah, in reality, it is a shocking for everybody when you talk about Indiana playing in the championship. Like, let's not kid ourselves. Who would have ever thought that Indiana would be in the championship? You know, we look at these guys as a basketball team, you know, hockey team, soccer team. We never really looked at these guys as a powerhouse championship team, to be honest with you. And for out of the blue, these guys come out with a great, amazing season that they've been playing all year. Like, great football. Like, I got to give them credit when credit is due. I didn't expect them to play like this until, you know, mid-season when they start, you know, turning heads. And they continue to do it. And so it's a very shocking. But at the same time, they have a great football team out of nowhere, you know, and give a knock to the NIL deals. I'm pretty sure they had a lot of factor into it, you know. But, hey, they built a great team. And right now they riding on the high wave that's playing pretty good.
So I got to tell you is that, you know, talk about coming out of nowhere in Indiana. I got to ask you about coming out of nowhere. You raced a cheetah. So you raced a cheetah. Can you tell us, first of all, how did that evolve? And then somebody was asking me, what? I go, yeah, he raced a cheetah. And somebody goes, did he win? I go, well, we're gonna get the answer today. So tell us about that.
So it was a project that Busch Gardens was trying to set up, and it was, they partnered with National Geographic, and it was, you know, they always have man versus a ape, strongest guy, who's the strongest. And then they came up with man versus cheetah, the fastest animal on the planet, which is obviously a cheetah, and then trying to pick one of the fastest guys in the NFL. So me and Chris Johnson actually did it together, and we took turns racing different cheetahs, and I ended up racing one. And so what they did was they put us in the cheetah ring, right? And they built the wall that divided us. So we was, if you look, they had the cameras over the top of us, so you can see us running side by side, but we wasn't, the wall was splitting us. And so, like, you can hear the cheetah walking, you can hear him growling, you can hear the paws digging into the dirt. Like, I can hear all that right beside me. You know?
I'm ready to hear the cheetah. I hope he doesn't have a big vertical jump,
or he's not hungry.
So, you know, you can hear everything. Like, I was able to hear him just walking and paws digging into the dirt. Like, you heard all that. And so, it was like a suicide down and back type race. And I end up beating my cheetah, man. And so when I beat my cheetah, it kind of, it blowed out. You know what I mean? Like, everybody knew about it. You know, went, oh, Devin has to race a cheetah and beat a cheetah. And I just kind of looked at it. If I was ever caught in the jungle and I had to get away from the cheetah, I know I wouldn't beat it straight ahead for a long distance. But if I can beat him with my quickness, stopping, going back and forth, then I got a shot. And that's what I took.
Not everybody in the world can beat a cheetah, Dane. So if it's a race between me and you and a cheetah, all I got to do is outrun you.
We just got to have a lot of pork rinds to offer. Just like, here, you know, why don't you just have some of these delicious pork rinds? So, Devin, we are so excited about the games coming up. We're excited about the Super Bowl. It's going to be great whether the Bears are there in the game or not. Gridiron Greats is going to be there. That's Mike Dicka's Gridiron Greats, and you will be there as well. We'll have links up for all of it. Before we let you go, for fans seeing this and want to keep up with you, not like the cheetah, right, because they can't keep up with him literally, but maybe social media-wise, where can they go to follow you?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram. I have an Instagram, Devin_Hester_23. And then I'm on Twitter at Devin_Hester_23. And pretty much it. And then Facebook, of course, you just type in Devin Hester and I pop up. So those are my three websites that I'm local on. I'm on them probably once or twice a day. So, you know, you can interact with me on there, and that's where you can find me.
Hey, really enjoyed the time with you today, partner, and good luck on Monday. We'll be in town for that, maybe run into you and so forth, but go you. Have a good one, partner. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Devin.
I appreciate you guys having me.